The following program is produced by the Tech Talk Radio Network.
Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here. Whenever I am listening to the radio, especially Tech Talk Radio, it's just such a party.
This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
And I'm Justin Lemmy.
We're the show that talks about computers,
technology,
and the internet. Thank you for being here. All right, so a real big question I have to ask for you for today's show, Justin.
Okay, sure, yeah.
What is your backup routine?
Yeah, about that.
What do you do when everything just suddenly you get that, you know, drive failed error or...
I've never actually had the drive failed error.
Never?
I do have a couple extra drives. I mean, so in my personal computer, I mean, I've got the, you know, a couple 2 terabyte drives that I have my pictures backed up on, but I don't have them double backed up anywhere. But for the most part, most of my important documents that I keep are online on the cloud.
Yeah.
So Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive, I use that as well. So that's where I keep most of my, you know, really important documents. But, yeah, I don't really have an actual backup strategy.
They've made it a little easier, though. And
who's they?
Well, the folks that make the hard drives, because they're giving you greater capacity now.
That's true.
And easier to hook up. They've given you the software to make it happen. And that's kind of why I've gone through this before. You may not have, but I have. It's nothing worse than when you go to fire the drive and it's just not working, mm-hmm. and you realize something has been written over. And luckily, and we're going to talk a little later on about drive recovery, what happens when you lose your data. But, you know, this can happen, and it can be devastating, especially if you don't have a backup. It's seriously like taking taking all of your stuff and throwing it out. Yeah. Just chucking it in the trash. So if you store all your photos, your music, one of the companies that makes a great solution is Western Digital.
Oh, yeah.
With us on standing by is Luke Autrey from Irvine, California at Western Digital headquarters to kind of give us a view of what Western Digital has. Luke, thanks for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for inviting me. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Western Digital for those that don't know too much about the company. I mean, it's been around for a long time. What can you tell us?
Been around a whole long time, right? I think we were there at the birth of computers, making chips that go into little floppy disk drives back about 30 to 40 years ago. So the company's been around a whole long time. What we're known for broadly under the Western Digital brand is our range of hard drives, whether they go inside your computer or they're external drives like a My Passport or a MyBook that you connect to the USB port. That's kind of our heritage and where we've been, you know, getting quite a lot of good runs over the last 10 years. The company is transforming. You know, around about, I think it was August last year, the company made the announcement of acquisition of SanDisk, which complements the hard drive technology that we're known for really quite perfectly with our own solid-state flash fab and factory over in Japan.
Right.
And so we're really excited about the evolution of storage, the next state of storage. Being solid state and making that transition for a lot of people from traditional rotating hard drive media to solid state drives. And we're really excited about the future of Western Digital and what's coming in the future.
Now, I have been a big proponent of solid state drive technology. I've told people, you buy a laptop, go ahead, buy one with 500 gig, but pull it out and pop in an SSD. You're going to find much better performance. And I honestly believe better security, better safety when using them.
Yeah, you know, the performance aspect is there, right? And, you know, this is a case where solid state and hard drive technology do complement each other. You know, as I think you mentioned earlier this week on your Fox show, right, people are taking more photos than ever before and data is just exploding, right? Traditional storage isn't as large as what it used to be on your computer. And so maybe you might only have a 320 gigabyte, you know, hard drive, or maybe it's a 256 gigabyte flash now. And this is where external hard drives really complement the end users and users in the market by being able to store all of the photos that they've collected in their lifespan and not worry about slowing down their computer.
Now, some people, they get a little confused with the My Passport line and the desktop backup devices.
Yeah.
They're not sure really how to do the backups. Does Western Digital make it easier for the end user to actually go ahead and back up those files?
Yeah, so whether it's a portable device, and for those that are on Facebook Live, you know, we're streaming a video right now, whether it's a portable device like a My Passport that I'm holding up here in my hand, or or a larger desktop device.
Wow, look at
like
that.
Like on my book, this is 16 terabytes of storage, right? WD is here to, you know, help users back up and protect their data, because we know that that's the most important thing that a lot of people have in their house today. It's their memories, which are all saved digitally, either on their computer or an external hard drive. And we make it really simple. We've got an application that we ship on all of our My Passport and MyBook products. It's called WD Backup. And this backup software we built ourselves, we've had it in the market for about 3 years now. And before that, we had an older version that we had called WD Smartware, which, you know, end users loved as
well.
Yeah. But it's really simple because, and quite frankly, it's something that I would be comfortable giving a passport over to my mum and say, install this, mum, click these three buttons, and your computer will be safely backed up. And what our software does is it just goes, it's not comprehensive in the fact that it's too difficult. It's really simple. It just goes and backs up the user's folders on the passport drive and does it every hour or every week, whatever the user selects, and it makes it really simple to get their stuff on their computer backed up onto an external drive.
It can also do like an image. Somebody could create an image, store it on their backup drive in case anything ever happened and they needed to restore everything to their system to get you back up and running.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually have two versions of backup software that we support. So one is the WD Backup that we just talked about, which is backing up my files. But we also partner with the world's leading system imaging company called Acronis, right? And they're known for a product called Acronis True Image. We have a free version of Acronis True Image that works with any WD external or internal device, for that matter, to actually back up your whole system, right?
Yep.
And so this is available for free for download. It's normally, I think, about $60 if you were to buy it in a retail shelf separately. But it works with any of our devices. So for your more advanced users that want to have a backup of their Windows and their whole system files, they can use Acronis True Image. And for those that, you know, just want to back up their files on a frequent basis, they can use our free WD backup software that we include with our product.
Now, some people have asked the current standard USB 3.0, if they have a USB 2.0 computer, they don't have maybe the added ports, can they still use these devices?
Yeah, generally speaking, the answer is yes. There's a little asterisk, and there's always an asterisk
yeah.
for some of these things. The asterisk is that, you know, USB 3 brought with it a greater power, right, through the connection. And so it works perfectly with Passport. USB 2 is not always providing enough power to power on a portable hard drive. And for that, you may need to have what we call a desktop hard drive, or in the WD language, it's called MyBook. These are not powered by USB. They're powered by a plug that goes into the wall.
Correct.
And they work absolutely no problems with USB 2.0. But we find that, you know, honestly speaking, a lot of people that still have USB 2.0, they're increasingly becoming the exception, not the norm. So most people should be okay with a Passport these days. And these little portable devices, they're quite amazing. I remember, you know, 10 years ago when I got into storage, it was 40 gigabytes, right? Even that was a lot back 10 years ago, 40 gigabytes, right? And that was, you know, what was that, about 10,000 photos or 10,000 photos or something? And now we ship them up to 4 terabytes, right, which is about 1 million photos.
Wow.
You know, that you can save on one of these things. And all of that for about $150.
Yeah.
You can put in your pocket and take with you. There's really no reason why people shouldn't be backing up their stuff today, since it's so easy and relatively cheap.
Somebody was asking me to do the math today. They said, well, I was explaining that, you have a 4 terabyte My Passport. And they said, well, how does that relate? So I started and I said, well, imagine one floppy that was like 1.44 meg. And then you have 100 of them. And then I started getting lost in the math. And honestly, I think my hair caught on fire. It was to try and explain it. It's hard.
Yeah, it's difficult to explain. But, you know, one thing that we need to keep mindful of is that while the capacity of the drives has gotten bigger too, the average size of a photo has gotten larger as well.
Mm.
You know, and even things like videos, you know, my iPhone that I'm talking to you today on, you know, shoots 4K video,
right?
My GoPro shoots 4K at 60 frames a second. The size of our files are getting larger as well, which is great, right? Because when I'm 80 years old and sitting in a retirement home, I can look back at my rafting trip that I had in the Adirondacks in upstate New York this year,
right,
and relive it in the full glory that it was back then.
Right. Now, for somebody who is using a laptop, My Passport is a great solution for them because, again, you don't have to carry around an extra power cord, and you have the different colors. And
absolutely. They come in 6 colors right now, all the way through to orange and yellow, right? So really quite diverse color palette.
Each of them. I had the camera on me. Let me pull it up on you. It's much better. There you go. All right.
We have them in 6 colors, black, blue, white, orange, yellow, and red. And a lot of, I'm honestly quite surprised about a lot of American people. When we look at the number of people that are buying orange, good on you, America, for stepping a little bit fashion forward this year. Maybe it's got something to do with the president. I don't know. I won't draw that conclusion.
Oh, great.
But let's just say that orange is punching above its weight right now.
Very good.
But you're right. You know, they plug straight into the USB port, and it's really designed just to be something that plug, just like a traditional USB flash drive that maybe your users are used to using. Plug it in, and then there's 4 terabytes of storage available. 3 more clicks and my stuff's backed up. And I can use it just like a flash drive is plug and play storage.
Now, has it, the My Passport line's been around for a while. This is kind of a new design, correct?
Yeah. So let me show you the, it was this rounded corners, you know, traditional hard drive looking type thing. And this type of design with the rounded corners and this horizontal, we've had in the market since around about 2012. WD actually shipped its first Passport back in 2004, would you believe?
Wow.
You know, and more people have been choosing My Passport over any other branded external hard drive in the world. And we're really quite proud of the legacy. But to your point, you know, you can see here we've changed the design a little bit. This particular design that we have, in addition to the colors, you know, brings with it, you know, a new platform for us to enable users to express themselves. It was a 2-year project that we conducted with an external design agency that's called Fuse Project.
Right.
The designer, Yves Bahar, the lead designer there, worked on some products like Jawbone and Jabra speakers, I believe. But the design that we have, you know, we've gone away from the rounded corners in this particular design, but we've got this nice little tapered middle piece and then a textured bottom. And keep your eyes open as to what's coming in this line over the next couple of months, because we're taking this a little bit further. We're really excited about that.
Really? Now, the capacities right now are what?
So the lowest capacity we ship in a Passport drive is 1 terabyte, right? Which
right.
A lot of people might think that's plenty, right? But again, we want to remind you that your photos are getting bigger too, right?
Right,
so don't underestimate your storage. They go from 1 through to 2, 3, and 4 terabytes on the Passport. It does have a bigger brother that's called MyBook.
Right.
MyBook is a desktop drive. We kind of mentioned it a little bit before.
I like those too.
This ships lowest capacity is 3 terabytes. And goes from 3, 4, 6, and 8 terabytes, right?
Wow.
And this is perfect for people to leave on their desk and just always be backing up their computer, in any time you want.
Absolutely. Now and then you have that 16 terabyte big guy,
I've got two big boys here. You know, we've got a product that's called MyBook Duo, and what this is, it's basically the single MyBook. And for just a reminder to your listeners, it's very visual right now on Facebook Live.
Yes,
we've got the single MyBook, but MyBook Duo is basically what we do is we put 2 hard drives inside this thing.
Oh, wow.
Right? And so these can run, for the advanced people, in a RAID 0 or a RAID 1 mode.
Oh,
right?
Excellent.
So that changes if I have maximum capacity or maximum protection. So I can choose to save my stuff on, replicate my stuff from one disk onto another. That comes in up to 16 terabytes. And I think in the market right now, this is about $400 to $500. So great value for high capacity storage. And then we take that a little bit further. We have a whole other series of products that are designed for creative professionals, and I can do my 4K video editing on the MyBook Pro type product.
Could you also use that as a server in the home as well?
Not designed for it. We have a different line of products. Let me grab one here called the MyCloud series that you might be able to see. What MyCloud is this is a hard drive that I connect to my router. Right.
Okay.
And I leave it on 24/7. It operates just like a server would in your office. And so it gives me a network drive. But the great thing about MyCloud, in addition to the centralized storage, and by the way, it backs up all of my computers and Macs and PCs and all of that, is that it will actually back up my photos from my phone wherever I am in the world.
Oh, now that's nice.
Right. And so as long as my home internet is on, right, this thing and my phone is connected to the internet somewhere in the world, it will back up my phone from wherever I am in the world. And I can access any of the files that I save on this. This is up to 8 terabytes from anywhere in the world through my phone or tablet or PC or Mac. And so these are our server products. They're called MyCloud. They come in consumer line, which is the white products here. We have the larger versions, which are 16 terabyte capacities.
Wow.
And then we have what's called a pro version, which is called MyCloud Pro. And so this particular product is getting rave reviews right now. What it does is it takes that basic promise of the MyCloud line, which is centralized storage, anywhere access of the content, but then we enable certain apps to run on this. And I don't know if some of your users are interested in things like Plex. Yep. So this is Plex's first hardware transcoding media server.
Right.
And I've got one of these running at my home with 32 terabytes of data on it.
Nice.
I share my Plex server out to people all around the world, my family in Australia, my family in upstate New York. And what MyCloud Pro is, it's powerful enough to transcode my 4K videos on the fly without, you know, stuttering. And so transcoding is the process of pulling the high-resolution videos into a manageable size for the internet connection. And MyCloud Pro is the first one to do that, and we're really proud of its success in the market. And if you take a little bit of a read online, it's getting some great reviews on that.
So anybody basically then that is a video editor or a photo graphics person, this way they can easily access anything they need, previous work parts for editing, or if they're doing, you know, graphics, visual effects, this is going to be great for them.
Yeah, whether it's editing, you know, content that I can access from anywhere in the world, or sharing out a folder, right, to my clients to review things like proofs or a video concept, MyCloud Pro enables you to do that all without the storage of monthly fees, right? A lot of people are used to paying $5 or $10 a month to people like Dropbox or Microsoft or Google. And what we do is we basically say, you know what, that's a nice business model, which is good, right?
Right.
But, you know, maybe you're not too sure about leaving your data sitting in some data center in the middle of, you know, Las Vegas, right? Or maybe you don't know where your data is and you really want to have that in your control, especially for creative professionals. They're very, you know, they take their data to heart, their videos to heart. And so MyCloud Pro enables me to keep it at home, safe in my home. I know exactly where my data is, and then I can share out pieces of that cloud for people to be able to access and review and even upload. And I can share out pieces of my cloud with my friends so that they can put stuff into my folder.
That is great. I worked on a project some years ago, and we were all editing, you know, HD video and sharing using the online services like Dropbox, and this would have made it so much better.
We find that a lot of creative agencies, they have a lot of input from the field, you know, whether it's people taking videos and then they upload it somewhere. But because if I was editing that video as it gets uploaded and I've got my full speed of my network, you know, supporting. It's not limited to my internet connection if I'm in my office editing that stuff that's on that.
Now, I know some people have asked, and we featured the drive about fault tolerance when you're carrying a drive around. You know, the last thing you tell a kid not to run with scissors, you tell people not to run with hard drives. How have they changed when it comes to what they can handle when somebody's moving these drives around like the My Passport?
Yeah, so, you know, you could... As always, you know, never run with scissors. Doesn't matter how slowly you walk. You probably shouldn't walk with scissors. Yeah. You know,
I'm not even allowed near them. Huh? I'm not even allowed near scissors.
Just don't pick them up, right?
Yeah.
You know, in relation to how things have changed, you know, the drives over the years have gotten more robust, right? Mm-hmm. But that said, you know, it's still a piece of media, right, with two discs inside them. Always make sure that the disc is powered down and safely ejected before you unplug it, right?
So that's point number still one. Do that then.
Should still do that, right? Yeah. It's always just good practice just to do it. What that does is it parks the heads and makes sure that the heads are not the heads, which are the, like the, I'm trying to think of a record player, right? Like, remember the little arm that goes out over the record?
Turntable.
Yeah, so the head, the turntable, right, exactly. The arm gets parked into the corner of the drive. And so that way, you know, if I walk around, you know, it's not going to damage and impact the drive too much, right? But obviously, if I drop this out of a plane, chances of it surviving are probably not that great, right?
Right.
I'll be honest.
And so you still got to be careful.
That's part of the limitation of a hard drive, right? And part of the reason why, you know, Western Digital Corporation's acquisition of SanDisk sets us ready for the future. As people kind of look to store on more solid state drives, and, you know, the price of solid state drives becomes cheaper in the market over time.
Now, I've had people who said they've wanted to move to solid state technology, but, you know, one of the barriers is, like, for example, I took my 750 gigabyte drive out of my laptop and I put in a 240 gigabyte drive in my drive, so I don't have as much space. Of course, I have that extra speed, and they said, well, that's kind of the give and take is the size. Now, I understand hybrid technology is coming, though, that it's going to give basically people the speed of SSD with the features of a traditional drive.
Yeah, you know, hybrid technology is kind of coming and going. You know, Seagate, I think, was the first out there with hybrid drive technology in around about 2010, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right.
And it's had its niche in the market. You know, honestly speaking, we're finding that a lot of people that build their own desktop, you know, computers, you know, they're using solid state for boot, but they're still putting a 6 or 4 terabyte hard drive inside the computer to actually have that storage, right? Microsoft has done a few things enabling tiered storage in Windows over time, and then they kind of rolled it back, which is a neat function where if you had an SSD and a hard drive inside the same computer, you could make a virtual solid-state hard drive through Windows called tiered storage. But we haven't, and Apple had it with Fusion technology or Fusion Drive on Mac OS X, for those people that may remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Again, these things kind of haven't gone too far. You know, and at the same time, we're finding that, you know, traditionally the solid-state hybrid drives, they've had a very low amount of flash on board, right?
Yeah.
So it might be a 750 gigabyte hard drive with 8 gigabytes of flash, right?
Yeah, which is still not enough.
it's not a whole lot, right? And so there's only so much benefit that gives me when I'm looking other things in my computer. But, you know, certainly from our perspective, we're kind of purists here at WD right now, where we say use the SSD for your boot drive and then add an external or another high-capacity hard drive inside your computer if you can fit it. For additional storage there.
Then
most of all, back up everything, right?
Back up.
Safe unless it's backed up.
There is nothing worse. And I remember, I know I'm much older than you, but I remember many years ago going to CES and getting a little stuffed, I don't know if they have them still around at WD, but a little stuffed guy with a funny hair. And you'd
little guy with a funny hair.
And he would squeeze it and he would say, did you remember to back up? Back up. Nothing worse when your drive dies and somebody says, did you back up?
It's the cheapest insurance policy you can actually buy, right? Because you only ever need to buy it once, right? And a backup, of course, means that your data is saved in two different places. So
absolutely.
If my computer died, I've still got my stuff here. A lot of people that are paranoid about their data, they choose to back up in three locations, right?
Yeah.
Myself, I'm a little bit of an advanced user, right? So I, you know, have one of these connected to my PC at home backing up. But then I've got my, you know, MyCloud Pro sitting at home, right? With a whole lot of data on it. I've got some personal files on there too. And I've actually set this up to actually back up to my parents' house in Australia.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Also have a MyCloud Pro running. So I bought two MyCloud Pros the day they came out.
Right.
Send one to Australia. So my data is going to back up to a different continent, right? So that if Southern California fell off the tectonic plate, that my data's safe.
Great.
And I can get my photos. So, yeah.
I have real estate in Southern Cal. Let's hope that never happens. Well, so this is really a great move for Western Digital with the new My Passport line. Great gift idea. As I have said, for Valentine's, again, people do this. They put their pictures. They put their music on there. They can really personalize an experience and not that expensive. Now, if they're on a Mac platform, let's verify and clarify that it does work on a Mac, correct?
It does work on a Mac. You know, I mentioned before we're purists. We are a little bit purist at WD. We offer two solutions for the Mac users. Actually, it's three. The first is one that just works out of the box with Mac, and it's called My Passport for Mac.
Right.
It's just like the rest of the Passport products that we showed before in the six colors, but this one's only available in black.
Okay.
It's formatted, ready for Mac. I plug it straight into my Mac, and Time Machine comes up and says, would you like to use this as a Time Machine? And it's one click, and my stuff is backed up. Right. So that's the first option. For the more advanced people or people that really want to buy an orange drive, you can buy an orange drive, which is designed for Windows, right? And it does work with Mac. You do need to reformat it. Again,
right.
Apple has made advancements in the operating system where I plug this in, it will say, would you like to use this for your Mac? And you say yes, and it will reformat the device.
Right.
That I can't use it with Windows interoperably, right?
Right.
I have to make a choice. Which one am I going to use it for?
Which platform,
Yeah, for the really advanced people, they might want to do it themselves and format it into something called XFAT, right, which works natively on PC and Mac. I lose some of the automatic backup capabilities when I do that,
right.
But you know that's an alternative there.
There are programs out there too that'll make it a lot of third-party programs that allow you to read Mac on a PC.
There are third-party programs as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, a great product line. If our listeners want to get more information, Luke, about it, what's the website they can go to?
Yeah, they can hit WD.com anytime, 24/7. We've got a broad range of solutions from internal hard drives to external hard drives to internal solid-state drives, and we're really quite excited for our users to jump on there and check it out.
Awesome. Luke Autry, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So you're thinking now about a backup routine?
I'm reconsidering my options now that we've heard all about that.
Probably should
get something else.
I've always
just for safekeeping, I can put it in the safe, or I can take it to a bank and put it in a safety deposit box or something. Yeah,
I've always thought that us being kind of the techies should be running everything in RAID. my son has a RAID.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
He's got RAID 5 at home, and he's got a Drobo and all that. which is, you know, a really cool device. But now with products that, that make for the consumers now, you can go out and you buy these devices that will do a RAID where it'll, you know, as it's writing to one drive, it's writing to another one as well. So, I mean, that's not that bad. I like that.
Yeah. And RAID 5 is obviously, you know, a de facto standard to back up your, you know, your stuff. Because if even if you have, for those of you who don't know RAID 5, if you have one drive fail, that's fine because the RAID 5 is a minimum of three drives.
Right.
You only get the data storage capabilities of two of those drives, whereas the third drive is actually a parity drive. And what that means is it keeps kind of like a database, in lack of better terms, keeps a database of all of the bits that are put amongst those other two drives. So if one drive fails, the other drive, the parity drive, can rebuild the data that was missing
right.
from that other drive that failed. So RAID 5 is kind of like the de facto. I mean, they have things now like RAID 10, RAID 20. I mean, it's crazy.
It depends on the environment you're in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you're in a data center, obviously you're going to be running, you know, massive RAIDs. But, you know, for a home user, even just a RAID 5, even just a single drive backup is fine.
Yeah, exactly. And there's software, again, to make it easy. The backup to the cloud is safe.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for a hardware solution, of course, those drives, it's a great idea, whether it's be the My Passport, which I carry with me. I carry my Passport drive everywhere. And it's a lifesaver.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a lifesaver. What? Why are you thinking that? Don't do that?
No, I don't carry my Passport drive with me.
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, because I've got the small little one. I've got the...
Well, so do I.
Yeah.
But I keep it in... I don't know. I keep it... Actually, you know what's probably wrong with that idea is I keep it about 10 feet from my computer. So, you know, in the event of a fire or something, knock on wood, but,
right.
you know, that's going to go down with the flames too. So,
oh, yeah, that's a good way to think about it. But no, you know, so many times, well, part of it, because I did that whole pulling out the hard drive, the 750 gig, and I've got really just a 240 in there. I could put a 480 SSD, but this way, having this backup, this 2 terabyte backup, means I don't have to keep everything on the hard drive. Keep it on the backup, and then I have a backup of that backup here at home. So sure. while I'm out on the road, if I ever, I need that file or I need that audio file, that video file or that graphic, I can just pull that up real easily. So it makes it real nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool stuff. All right. The other thing that I know you have experience in is routers, especially you work with Juniper Networks.
Yes.
And, you know, there are so many different choices. There's a company on the market that we heard about from CES called Rokos. And Rokos uses almost like a VPN type strategy. So that when you're out, even if you're in a coffee shop, you could still connect to your, through their app, to your VPN, or your connection, which will go right into your router. So enable you to, you know, grab your files, surf the web safely, also prevents your kids from doing stuff they're not supposed to do. There's all kinds of ways. So we're going to talk with the CEO and co-founder of Rokos with us on the line here, standing by. So we'll talk to him next. We'll be back with more of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
And I'm Justin Lemmy. You can find us on the web at techtalkradio.com or on Facebook, facebook.com/techtalkers. We'll be right back.
Got a new tech device? Be sure to recycle your old one. The Consumer Technology Association is making it easy to recycle your old TVs, tablets, and smartphones. Go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll find the recycling center closest to your home. That's greenergadgets.org.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
In Virginia recently, a computer crash wiped out a decade's worth of U.S. military data. However, this morning the Chinese government called and said, no problem, we backed it up. So...
Hi, this is Adrienne Barbeau. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, and you're going to learn a lot.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemmy.
I'm Andy Taylor, and I am looking forward to finding out. Justin got himself a new camera.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is this a Christmas gift to yourself, or was it from somebody?
Well, actually, it was a pre-newborn son gift to myself.
Oh, very nice.
I wanted a new camera because I do love DSLRs. Obviously, they take way better photos than any cell phone camera could ever achieve.
They're getting close.
Nah, not even. No, they're not. I mean, the Google Pixel has the best smartphone camera on the market right now. That's what, 12 or 14 megapixel?
Yeah, I think the V20 is probably a little better than the Pixel. I mean, I like the Pixel, but V20 is good.
My D5500 from Nikon is a 24 megapixel camera.
It's pretty amazing what they can do, but we'll talk about that coming up in a bit about the decision to get and the DSLR for those, because there are a lot of people that do have cell phones that take great, great photos. So we'll talk about that. But we want to talk a little bit of the world of security, securing your home router. You know, we know there's so many routers in the market. I know you use Juniper. You actually installed that in your home.
I did. I have a Juniper SRX firewall / router.
Right. And those are good. And there's some consumer choices in the market, but it can be really confusing when you go out and you look at, well, you got D-Link, you've got Linksys, you've got, I mean, you've got so many different choices.
Netgear.
Yeah. Which way do you go? Well, there's a company out there that's trying to change kind of the way we think about routers, and that is Rokos. We have the CEO and co-founder, Sezan Yusal, who is standing by with us on the line to tell us a little bit about what his company does. Sezan, thanks for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the company and what its real mission is.
Rokos is a cybersecurity protection and parental control router service. It's mouthful, right? But basically what we are doing is we come up with the most powerful home router ever made to run the enterprise-grade cybersecurity software to protect our homes as if it's a corporation, as if it's a government, because we got all these connected devices in our house. We have no idea what they do, what they are connected, as well as parental control to give parents to control what their kids are doing on internet.
So this is going to be a little different than some of the routers we've seen on the market, which basically really they connect us to the net. They connect our homes together. This one adds an extra layer of protection by adding this into the router.
That is correct. I think the time has come to change the router's functionality from just purely making connectivity to internet and now to add the protection from internet, because as we cruise on the internet, as we make all these connections, we need to be careful what type of information we're bringing to our PCs, what type of information we are getting when we're watching certain shows and everything. Today's routers are not capable of protecting us. So what we did is we added a software feature called Intrusion Prevention System, which is widely used in the governments and the commercial world. And it's basically looking at every single data packet coming from internet and going to internet to look for bad content. Our networks, home networks, are getting more complicated, almost like an office, a company network of 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And nobody wants to hire an IT department for their homes. And I'm working as a network engineer for so many years, I sometimes even get frustrated with dealing with these new gadgets, new routers. So we did put extra time to make our service or router configuration as easy as possible. Setting up our Rokos Core router, it literally takes a minute or two. And once you set it up, going forward, everything is in your app, and the app is connected to Rokos Cloud, and the Rokos Cloud connected to your Rokos Core router.
Now, is this going to be similar to, say, a VPN in a way? I mean, it's a more private, secured way to communicate to the internet?
The way we talk to the customer routers sounds like a VPN in a way. We are creating a virtual network of all the routers. But the VPN the way it is addressed in the market, which is virtual private network, is something we're going to come up with in a month or so. Okay. And it will create very interesting features, capabilities for the homeowners. The first example I give is kind of a stupid one, but it is effective. For example, I was vacationing in overseas in Mexico. We got bored. We wanted to watch a Netflix show, but we found out that it is not possible to watch Netflix from Mexico.
Right.
So I VPN'd into my house. And of course, I have the luxury of using every single feature before it becomes public in the
nice.
Market. This is the advantage of being CEO, right?
Yeah, that makes it really good.
I did VPN into my house. Boom, I was able to watch the Netflix shows. So that's one of the small features. But the real thing is, with the VPN, you really want to protect your internet connection, especially when you are in public networks. For example, say you're going to Starbucks or any coffee shop. You're drinking coffee or having lunch, whatever, and you want to be on internet checking your emails. All of a sudden, somebody tells you, you got to check your bank account. Like, oops, you got to stop that, because you should not be doing any financial transactions on a public network.
Right.
But if you have VPN, you can connect to your home, and you're virtually inside your home. then you're secure. You can do anything you want that you could do in your house.
So you would
that's
be,
the big advantage of VPN.
Now, would this be done through an app or a program on the PC or a browser that specifically would connect to your home and then it would go out from there?
Very good question. Yes, you need to download an app, and we use commonly used VPN protocol called OpenVPN. And we will build an app and application and instructions to help the homeowners to install the VPN application. It's very easy. You have to do it on your devices, on your phone, on your laptop, because that application literally makes a connection to your router, which has an OpenVPN server, then creates a tunnel between your device and your home.
All right. Sounds like a really good layer of security. What about the encryption on it?
The encryption used on OpenVPN is one of the good ones out there. And it's OpenVPN is a very common VPN protocol. Like I said, it's been used by companies, banks, even government institutes. And it does come with the encryption standard AES-256, which is the highest encryption level available in VPN. So for us, of course, it's very important to protect our customers' private information, the privacy, so we pick the best one out there. Initially, we are addressing the residential market for moms and dads. Once we get enough features out there, we will probably add small to medium businesses into our marketing. That will probably happen end of summer time frame.
Now, is there a monthly fee?
For us to come up with all these feature sets, the VPNs, the security, and the remotely managing router and everything, we had to design a very expensive hardware for our company. So the Rokoscope router is our own design, and it turns out to be very expensive. So since we cannot sell this as a business to our customers, we said, we're going to make this as a subscription. Our main features are cybersecurity and parental controls, which are, by definition, they are dynamic, meaning every day there is a new malware, new ransomware, or new bad, inappropriate site for the kid. Somebody has to update these sites, this information to a router, and that's what the Rokos service is about anyway. So it is a service that constantly updates your router. Hence, it's a subscription. This provides not only cybersecurity and the parental controls, but also the VPN access. So everything is bundled. One fee covers everything. Parental control actually was the first thing we started marketing with the Rokos service, because we know that from our families, from our neighbors, we know that it is a challenge. We want our kids to be on internet, get all the good content, get educated, get entertained. But we know that there are bad things out there. So unfortunately, today's routers, even if some of them have these features, it's not easy to configure them. So we come up with a way of tweaking these parental controls as easy as possible, almost like using an app, a Facebook app or a game on your phone. And that's the first thing we did. And it is part of the service.
Does the Rokos router have a Wi-Fi capability for people or a guest account? Can they do something like that?
It does. It comes with the two Wi-Fi radio to support both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz connections, which is today's commonly used highest speed Wi-Fi frequencies. And as well as there's a guest Wi-Fi feature because we all get guests, and sometimes we throw parties and people ask our passwords. Well, we don't want to give our password because, we tend to use the same password everywhere.
Yeah.
So we come up with a guest password access. So what happens with the Rokoscope router, when you want to throw a party, you create a guest password or guest access code for a number of days, say 1 day or 2 day. Then you email or SMS or text message this access code to your guests.
Oh, nice.
And when they log in and they get an access for the duration that you set to. Now, after that, they cannot go anywhere. And that guest network is only for accessing the internet. The guests cannot see anything in your network. If our customers live in a big house, in a mansion where Wi-Fi signal doesn't go through, there are ways of extending that. You can use repeaters or you can use wireless mesh devices. As long as you put them in what we call bridge mode, and we can help the customers very easily, then Rokos device is going to be seamlessly connected to that, and the whole house is going to have Wi-Fi coverage.
So if somebody is investing in maybe the Google infrastructure or some of these others that are out there, they can still have the security that Rokos is going to offer and still be able to use these other devices.
Absolutely. And we tell our customers, make Rokos Core as your main router, even if you have some proprietary ISP device that you cannot eliminate. For example, Verizon Fios uses their own fiber connection or coaxial connection. You have to use that router. You cannot eliminate that. What you do is you connect your Rokos router behind it, but you got to make sure every Wi-Fi connection, every wired connection go through the Rokos, so that every single device is going to be protected from internet, as well as every kid's device is going to get exposed to all these filters for the parental controls.
And the end user, they do have access to the firewall. So if they need to open a port, say like for us, we do streaming or somebody who does gaming, they'll be able to do that.
Yes, yes. I mean, that we always have customers who are very advanced and they do very interesting things. So there is in the app, which is the only way of connecting the controlling the Rokos service and the Rokos Core, there is an advanced settings section, which looks like a traditional router. You can do anything like a filtering. You can do port forwarding. You can enable, there is a protocol called UPnP, which automatically opens the ports. That's also available. So yes, they can do that too.
So this can be used by virtually anybody with very little internet experience, very easy to set up. And again, with all that security and that extra protection. Now, if our listeners want to get more information,
the website, rokos.com, that's rokos.com. And we also have Facebook page. And if they sign up for our newsletters, which is also on the website, every time we come up with good ideas or new features, whatever, we can share those with our listeners, guests.
Very good. Cezanne, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us. And again, we hope our listeners check out that website, and we'll have a link on our website as well.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, we're going to find out a little more about Justin's big DSLR purse. Your first purchase of a DSLR camera, right?
Second.
Second. Well, don't tell us, but we'll find out what brand you had before. That might be very leading. So again, we'll do that. Plus, if you've ever thought about drive recovery, you've lost data, you've accidentally deleted stuff. You know, I've been doing this for people for quite some time, but really, honestly, it's stuff you can do yourself. It's pretty easy. There is some software out there to make it possible. So we'll talk about that too. We'll be back with more of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
I was watching a DVD the other day. I saw that thing that's at the beginning of DVDs these days, you know, the anti-piracy advertisements. And this one said, you wouldn't steal a mobile phone. You wouldn't steal a car. You guys might have seen this. And I think to myself, well, you're right, you know. I wouldn't steal a car. But if a mate of mine called me up and said, Sam, I've just bought a new car. Would you like me to burn you a copy? I reckon I'd consider that.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemme.
I'm Andy Taylor. And I've really been chomping at the bit to find out about your camera. I know that you've had the camera since the birth of Eric, so that was kind of cool. Now, one thing that's always leading is when you ask somebody, oh, what'd you end up getting? And right away, they'll tell you, I got a Canon, or I got an Nikon, or I got a, you know, Sony. They'll be very, you know, very brand-driven.
Of course. And there's a good reason behind that, though.
And so let me ask you, what was your previous camera to your Nikon? What do you have, the D5500?
I currently have the D5500, yes.
All right. So what was your previous one?
Take a guess.
Nikon.
Yes.
So you stuck with the brand. And now, is there a reason why you chose Nikon?
Absolutely. Because the thing is, it's not about the body of the camera. The bodies of the camera will change every couple years, and you're going to upgrade every, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Right.
The thing is, it's the lenses. Once you pick a brand and you buy a lens for that brand, those lenses will last you a lifetime if you take care of them really well.
Yeah.
And the thing is lenses are exponentially.
Yeah, that works.
Sure, why not?
I think we bought it.
They're way more expensive than the body itself.
Right.
I mean, you can find lenses out there for thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And so I already had two lenses even though there were basic lenses from my old Nikon D60, which was a 2008 model, I had those lenses already, and I was like, well, why am I going to go buy a Canon? And yes, they're beginner lenses. I could have easily bought a Canon and gotten a beginner lens with it, you know, like the kit. Right. But I said, well, I've already got two lenses from Nikon. I already know how the lenses work. I already know, I'm familiar with the layout of how Nikon works.
Right.
So I guess I'm just going to be a Nikon guy.
It is funny, though. Most photographers, you'll see, will generally stick to a brand. I've never seen a Nikon around them and a Canon. You know, some guys carry two cameras.
Yeah.
You don't see that happening.
Yeah, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to have a Canon guy or girl, and you're going to have a Nikon guy or girl.
Yeah. Now,
that's just the way it's going to be.
Now, why didn't you just
stick? It's like Mac versus PC.
Well, yeah, exactly. Why didn't you just stick with the D60? What made you say, you know, I really need to go to the D5500?
Well, I mean, again, the bodies of the cameras will improve every few years, and there's a lot more features in the bodies of the cameras.
Mm-hmm. Better sensors?
Obviously, better sensors. You're going to have way more megapixels. I think my D60 was probably, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think it was like 18 megapixels or 16 megapixels, I want to say. This one's a 24 megapixel camera. So obviously, the quality of the photos are better. You get more features. The biggest feature that I really like about the two biggest features about the D5500, you have a wider preview screen.
Right.
So, you know, the big LCD screen on the back that you can see your pictures or you can make changes to the settings. It's bigger than the D60. It's almost twice as big as the D60.
Right.
But the biggest feature is the ability to do 4K video recording straight to, you know, the memory card. Again, also the memory cards too. I have a 64 gigabyte memory card in my new D5500. When I put that same memory card in my D60, it doesn't even recognize it. It's like, I don't know what this
probably goes what up to 16 or 32,
probably 16. Yeah. So obviously you get more support for, you know, higher quality photos, more photos in a memory card. I think the D5500 goes up to 256 megs or gigs. So you have a lot of room on that. But again, you can record live video and it can be in 4K resolution. Yeah. I don't even have a 4K camera. I mean, a video camera. Yeah. I don't even have a 4K television.
Right.
But the ability to be able to do this on my camera and be able to record those precious moments. And the reason I got it was because of Eric.
Right.
Because I want to be able to take pictures and record videos of his first days of life. And his progression as he grows up, because someday I want to be able to show him that.
My kids are all grown up, and you know that's part of the downside is I don't have video.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's some VHS tapes here and there, but now the kids that are being born today, they have all this.
Their whole life is being recorded.
Everything's being recorded, and this is something you, like you said, you want to show this back. Like during his wedding, you know, or
I want to embarrass the crap out of him.
What a great
dad! I want to show his first poop explosion,
I'm sure you've already caught.
And put it all over the internet.
See, all we have to tell our girls is the time that we walked into the room and they were holding their diapers, and then we realized we've got trouble.
Yeah.
That was it. But now you can capture it in 4K.
Absolutely. Well, and then I'm going to show that to him on his wedding day.
Now, I know one of the things, too, is if you're shooting, and this is the reason why there are some people out there that maybe still are shooting on a Canon T1 or, like you say, a D60, and they're thinking, well, I want to shoot video, but what's the benefit of me going to a 55 or even if they're in the Canon family to a 7D or one of the other...
Your equivalent to the Canons.
Is low light. The low light features, the sensors that are on the 5500... The sensors that are on the Canon are really good. So what happens is you could be in a low light situation. So much so, I'll tell you, I shot a wedding at night and the lighting wasn't that good. Now I have a JVC 4K. It's just basically a video camera. Mm-hmm. You know, it just came out, been out just not that long. My Canon 7D has been out for a couple of years. I got better footage with the Canon 7D because of that low light sensor than I did with a camera that is made for video, which actually was very depressing, you know, because price wise, they were about the same price. You know, we're talking right around the $2,000 mark, and that's what happens.
But again, it really honestly depends on the lens that you're using. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get a nice Canon or a nice Nikon, you know, body. But if you have crappy lenses or beginner lenses, you are not going to get the best pictures. Now, I actually have a neighbor who shoots exclusively on Nikon.
Right.
And he has some amazing lenses. I mean, I'm talking, you know, I think the one that he let me borrow, he said he bought it for like $600.
Oh, wow.
It's a fixed lens. So it's not a zoom lens. It's
okay.
A zoom, but it's a fixed 50 millimeter Nikkor lens. It's
okay, made by lens. Nikon, I'm sorry.
Because it uses the F mount. That's what Nikon uses.
Right.
But it's a fixed lens. It's 50 millimeter. I think the aperture size on that, which again, we're getting a little geek speak here, but
yeah.
Aperture size is very important for lenses. I think it's a 1.8. But that he's like, here, take this lens, take a picture with your current lens, then remove the lens, put my lens on there, and take that exact same picture and tell me the difference. And my God.
It was pretty amazing.
Like night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, it is amazing.
The lens can make the difference.
Absolutely. The lenses make all the difference.
Have you thought about maybe getting one of these lenses, the super huge telephoto lens?
No.
I mean, that's not really anything you would need, right?
No, I don't shoot wildlife.
Yeah.
I don't go out and photograph wildlife or anything like that. I don't need the huge telephoto lenses. The one lens that I am looking at getting, though, is a zoom lens.
Right.
But it's a nice, because it's, I can't remember. It's like, I want to say 35 millimeter to 700 millimeters. So it's a huge
zoom. That's a good lens, yeah.
It's a huge zoom, but it also has an aperture of like 1.8. So it really can open up. And the aperture, again, is like your, if you think of your eyeball,
uh-huh.
And you're looking at a bright light, how your pupils dilate.
Right.
And your pupil, you get smaller, right?
Okay.
That's like an aperture. So then when you go into a dark room, your pupils dilate more, or not dilate, what's the opposite of dilate?
Like cat lens, you know, they get bigger.
They get bigger.
Yeah.
That's what an aperture of a lens is. It allows more light into the lens of the camera, which gives you, like you said, better low light pictures.
Right.
So having a good lens that has a low aperture setting, or a wide aperture setting, I should say, like a 1.8, is amazing.
Yeah.
But the price of that particular lens I want is about $1,200.
Yeah, that's hard to yeah.
But you get that diapers. One lens, that's going to cover you for almost anything. Yeah, that's a lot of diapers. Right
there. That's a heck of a lot of diapers, yeah. Yeah. Formula and blankets and everything else. So
don't remind me.
Yeah. Like, one of the things I've been working on this week is data recovery. And, you know, people have asked this before. You know what happened? I deleted my drive. And it's so funny how many people accidentally.
Next.
Yeah. They accidentally delete a drive. Now, number one, if you ever do something like this and suddenly you've deleted a file accidentally, one thing to remember is Control-Alt-Z can be your best friend. Sometimes that will recover stuff. If you've not changed out of Windows and everything, that can help.
I've always been told that if you delete a file that is critical,
yeah,
that the moment you realize that you've deleted it, the
it's best too late.
Thing to do it, no.
No.
The best thing to do is power down that computer immediately and don't turn it back on until you take that drive somewhere to see if they can recover. Because when you delete a file, the file is really not deleted. The data is still physically living on the hard drive in terms of its way it's written. It's still there.
Right.
It's only gone permanently once that sector, because basically when you delete a file, mm-hmm. you don't delete it. All you're doing is you're telling the hard drive to mark that section as available.
Right.
So next time the hard drive comes around and says, I need space for this file. I'm going to write it right here.
Yep.
And then it's going to erase your data permanently. Well, actually not permanently.
Sometimes it'll do it in chunks and you might find a little piece chunks. Of it. Yeah.
But then again, also there's the DOD, the Department of Defense standard, where you have to, you know, erase a drive 7 straight times before it'll really be gone. But my point is being your data's still there.
Yeah.
And so if you can take it to a drive recovery person and say, look, I'm looking for this file. I shut it down immediately after I deleted it. Your chances of getting that file back are exponentially, there we go.
Yeah.
Wait,
that works. increased.
Increased.
Yes.
There we go. Let's just do that.
That works.
Yeah. Let's just do that. Yeah. You have a much better chance of getting your file back as if you were to continue using your computer and keep writing data to that hard drive.
All right. There's a company in Australia. And if you're thinking about doing it yourself, and I have used this, I have recovered stuff from cell phones off SD cards hard drives. And I could go into that. And I think maybe we'll save that for next week. We'll talk a little more about that. But if you want to take a look at it, there's a couple of programs out there. Number one, Kroll OnTrack. They are considered one of the big guys when it comes to data recovery. And if you ever get into a situation where your software is not able to recover it, you can. And I have to say, if it's important, send them the drive. Now, the thing is, I say if it's important because it is a pricey process. But if you can recover it yourself, there is some software available from them. Another one is Get Data, which is a company in Australia. They make a really good, easy-to-use software program that'll recover audio files, video files, recover whole file structures. They also have a program that will do just photos. So if you accidentally delete photos, or you lose a folder, even a drive that has been, believe it or not, partitioned, can sometimes you can find and recover it. So, you know, it's a give and take. You might be able to do it. You might not. Their current version is, they've got 6 in beta right now. It's 5.7.1. Use that one. That one's, I'm pretty pleased with it. And again, this is something you can do yourself, but you might want to take a look at Get Data, and then you should be able to do your recovery there that way if you want to try this at home. But remember, you cannot recover off onto the drive that you're recovering from. So if you're working with a backup drive or a hard drive in your computer, you need to have and make sure it's working first before you start to do what's called a build. And remember, it takes time. So if you're going to do this, it does take a lot of time. And again, we'll cover some of this in next week's show. In the meantime, I've got a great website of the week.
Yes, I like this.
Yeah, you know, you're being a dad now. You can start seeing little things and make you feel like you're getting older.
Make me feel older, yep, of course. You know, this is a segment where we tell you how old you are.
Oh, yes. And boy, did I feel it. You're a dad. I'm a great grandpa. So
I can't believe that.
So we'll go over this website you want to check out coming up. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. Again, you can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/TechTalkRadio. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
And this is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. Welcome back.
Thank you for being here. You can find us again on the web at any time, techtalkradio.com. You can check out the video we did with Luke, who we talked to earlier today from Logitech, and actually see the products being demonstrated. You can actually see from Western Digital Headquarters the different drives, the My Passport, all of that. You can find that on our Facebook page, Tech Talkers, as well as our blog, blog.techtalkradio.com, and techtalkradio.com as well. So cool stuff. And we're finally putting pictures up on our website. Did you see that?
Good.
Yeah, we finally started. We're starting slowly to get them. It's, you know, it's one of those things. We have a Flickr account. I'd just like to direct you to Flickr, but we should probably have it on our website too. So that's why we're doing that. All right. So you want to find out how old you are?
Not really, but I think we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, here's a website you could go to. It's actually kind of fun. Now, the URL is a little confusing. It's getting old. All right? getting old.com.
U.REGETTINGOLD. .com.
Okay. All right. That's good.
U.REGettingOld.com.
Well, I want to get these guys that have created this site on the show because it's actually pretty good. You put your birthday in there. It'll tell you exactly how old you are. All right. So
I'm 13,170 days old.
It's okay. I'm 19,000. Yeah. So I'm older than you. Yeah. When you think it's 365 days in a year. All right. And it'll tell you combined, which celebrities combined make up your birthday. It will tell you how many candles. Total number of candles on my birthday cake so far are 1,485.
Oh, this is bad. Although it does tell me my heart has beaten approximately 1,317,4,864 times. Yeah, okay.
The Great Machine. That's what it is. Wow. Tells me that just a couple weeks after I was born, the very first Walmart store opened in Arkansas.
Oh.
So Walmart has been with me my entire life. Anyway, you got to check out the site. Do it with your friends, your spouse, whatever. You're going to have some fun with it. You're going to pull this up for Misa?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try this and let her know how old she is.
Be careful how you word that.
I know.
I'd like you to be here next week.
How young are you?
Actually, we'd like everyone to be here next week. Again, techtalkradio.com for more info about the show. We'd love your comments, your questions. Feel free to email them to us. Use our contact form, and we may read them on the air. Anyway, have yourselves a great week. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemme. We'll see you next week.